Hi, continuing our conversation here on the Maximum Motivation members site, and our guest here is Ted Karajas. And Ted, I just wanted to go into a couple other areas. And one of the things we talked a little bit in the initial interview with you with regards to making yourself stand out, that type of thing, things that you can do. How do you take, for our listeners, if they're young in their career, for instance, how do they take and put together maybe a strategic plan for their career and to get to the levels that they want? What are some suggestions that you might give at this point?
If you know where you're going to start working, the best way to do that is to understand what the organizational structure is within that organization. Moving from Kraft Foods to Land of Frost, completely different structure, titles for things. And when I interview with other companies, it's extremely different from company to company. When I came in as a food operations and sanitation supervisor, I had no idea kind of where I wanted to go. I thought I wanted to stay in the operations realm, and sure enough, I kind of got into continuous improvement. And so once I started to realize that that was becoming where I was extremely good at and where I actually kind of enjoyed to being, it became, well, how can I, first of all, diversify a little bit? And because you don't want to, in my opinion, and this is my opinion, but a lot of organizations are starting to look at this. It used to be that when you were in manufacturing, they just wanted, to be an operations supervisor to operations or production manager to a manufacturing manager to a plant manager. Well, nowadays they want that diversity in your background. And so I started laying out, well, where can continuous improvement fit, but yet will diversify? And that's what you really want to do. Start looking at what will build upon your experience within that realm, but not necessarily in that realm. And to me, that's where you're really going to get a lot of bang for your buck, because you're not going to stay solely in one discipline. You're going to be able to spread yourself out a little bit while hopefully still doing what it is that you are trying to progress through. And so that's, to me, that's the best way to kind of get rolling if you're within the company already. I find it very, very difficult to do that if you're not quite sure exactly what company you want to go through at the start. So,
would it be correct, the importance of their training and development programs to align with your strategic career plans? And what I mean by that is if you're going to an organization that's a sink or swim type, they throw you into the fire and say, well, if you survive, you survive, as opposed to a group that takes and challenges you in areas of interest and maybe in areas that aren't of interest to take and build a foundation for you. What are your thoughts that way?
Well, definitely the continuing education is always key. Like I said, when I took a lot of the courses, they were not specifically to any type of food manufacturing. They were leadership courses.
Sure.
How do you address, these issues of building a team or generational differences or addressing emotions? That is the most awkward thing you can possibly do in a workplace, is addressing emotions. I'll tell you what, that is... Sometimes you almost want to laugh, sometimes you almost want to cry, sometimes you just want to pull your hair out if you have any. Unfortunately, mine's going quickly. But those were the type of educational experiences that I tried to reach out for. Now, once you know your direction, or if you know your direction, definitely expanding upon that knowledge, because you can get a lot within a bachelor's degree or, an associate's degree. But to be able to take those more fine-tuned specifics, within your industry, if possible, will definitely build upon what you already know. Because when you're in college, you've got 4 years of information coming to you. And until you get into your true career, you're not going to really know how some of that stuff is going to play in. It's just like talking to your kids now. I'm trying to explain to my daughter why basic algebra is important, because this is how you can use it day-to-day. It gets back to that, why am I doing this type thing. And so by being able to expand not only within your discipline, but also in the leadership realms or organizational realms, those are always benefits.
I think when we talk about continuing education too, the human element the human concept behind it is so important. And understanding people, how to lead people, how to direct people. You know, a lot of times you have individuals that have extremely strong skill set from a technical standpoint, but that element of leading people has been somewhat subject. And you see these people many times reach a plateau, and that's as far as they go.
Yeah. Yes.
Go ahead.
I've had to turn down people for positions that I was hiring for. Great technical abilities, great being able to put together presentations, but not very good at necessarily leading a group, which is what we were looking for at the time. So, you know, it's something that is, it's a lot easier if you start off young, whether you were a team captain of a sport or a debate team or anything. But at the same time, as you progress through, you really want to be able to take those opportunities to lead, especially in a low-threat environment where you're going to be doing small projects, because that will build that leadership experience upon also taking courses or any type of training opportunities possible. Those kind of can go hand-in-hand. Take those, like I mentioned before, if you volunteer for things, especially the low-threat things that get you those opportunities to work on your weaknesses, and if it is leadership, then you need to jump on those opportunities.
Mm-hmm. You know, as a manager, and you mentioned a little bit, what are some of the things you look for in candidates that you hire?
Well, a big thing is, are you good at conveying thoughts? I don't want you to just be able to recite to me what's on your resume. I'm usually going to ask a few questions that kind of throw you a little bit out of your element. And, you know, I'm not looking for somebody that's going to spout off an answer. I want somebody to be able to put together a good thought and convey that to me. Because that right there shows that, you know, you're not just a robot that's going to convey information. You are going to be able to formulate thoughts and opinions and be able to present them in a meaningful way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry?
No, I agree with you.
Okay. Have you demonstrated strong skills in the past? Again, that goes to that technical knowledge. But then, are you able to progress to that leadership role, if it is a leadership role that you're applying for? Are you going to be able to progress? Because we want to be able to promote people based on their ability to move forward, not necessarily just on what they did in the past. The big thing, too, is, are you confident and likable? You can teach people a lot of things, and I'm a true testament to that. Not a single job, basically, has related to the one that I'd done previously, almost. You know, none of it relates to what I did in my bachelor's degree of history teaching. So I'm the poster child for it. It doesn't really matter what you get your degree in or what you're, you know, looking to do. You know, you keep doing well and you keep progressing, you keep getting promoted because of the ability that I've, the success I've had and the ability I've shown to be able to progress to that next step. But are you confident and likable? Now that is, do you fit into the organization? You know, some organizations are more stringent. Some organizations are more open. I mean, I can only imagine walking into Facebook, and, you know, that's just going to be completely different than walking into, you know, the corporate headquarters at Kraft Foods or, you know, Bank of America or any of those large organizations. Are you confident and likable, and are you going to fit into that organization or, you know, within a plant? Are you going to fit in with that plant culture? You really have to try to understand what it is that you're walking into. But if you're not going to be a good fit, that's probably a good thing if that's caught early, because that can make for a very, very awkward situation as time goes on. So I'm really looking for somebody that's confident and likable. And the other big thing, too, is be honest with your weaknesses. Just about every interview talks about your weaknesses, especially when you're first starting with a company. What are your weaknesses? What do you feel like you can improve on? And so many times people try to turn a weakness into a positive. Please don't do that. Talk about your weaknesses, but then talk about what you're doing to improve upon those weaknesses. Are you taking classes? Are you, you know, reading and studying? Are you trying to write out a plan, a strategic plan on how you're going to address those issues that you have and try to make them not as weak, or even, you know, in some cases they can become a positive, again, if you study hard enough, long enough, or if you focus on it enough. So please don't try to turn a weakness into a positive. Definitely talk about your weaknesses, but then have a plan on what you're doing to try to fix them.
Mm-hmm. We talked a little bit about, you know, the interview and that type of thing. And you know, knowing the culture, I think that's part of the preparation for an interview. What are some ideas that you have when individuals sit down to prepare themselves for an interview? Are there some points that you think would be very applicable that they could use?
Absolutely. Know the company history, but at the same time, understand their future. Most companies are going to tell you kind of where they're going, and if they don't, you can usually tell by looking at where they've been, where they are now. You can kind of, and you know, maybe if they're doing more product rollouts, or you know, and I'm talking a lot in a manufacturing environment because that's where I've been focusing. But you know, where are they going in the future, and you can kind of get a feel for that. So understand that, and then try to plug in how you would, you know, be a benefit to the company. How would you help them get there? And if you're coming in a low, you know, at a beginner level, and as a supervisor, as a you know, a plant floor employee or whatever, it's not too over your head to be able to say, well, you know, I have thoughts on this, and this is why I think that I'm strong and be able to help us get to that point. All these jobs, you're going to probably get a job description, especially if it's coming from a recruiter, which are great tools, by the way. I've had more luck with recruiters than I've ever had working by, you know, on my own when I was doing job searches through both my jobs that I've taken. So, but you're going to get a job description. Have examples of each of those duties and responsibilities or those expectations. Have an example of what you've done in the past. And then even better, if you can prepare, you know, what you can bring to the table in that aspect. Okay, not just what you've done, but what can you do moving forward for them within that realm. Be prepared to discuss things like times that you led, times that you followed, times that you succeeded or failed. Tough decisions that you've had to make. If you're going for, you know, a supervisor position or higher, what are some of those times you've had to deal with behavioral issues? How do you interact, or how do you make those types of decisions? What kind of leader are you? Are you passive? Are you a team-oriented? Are you more individualistic? You're going to have to be able to answer a lot of those questions. And, you know, it's always tough because, you know, you kind of have these thoughts in your mind of what you are, but then a lot of times you start talking about it, and you got to make sure that you understand what you want to say before you say it. So prepare for all of that.
Sure.
Always dress for one position higher than the position you're interviewing for. That's my own personal philosophy. I've been told that. I don't remember who, way back when, somebody told me that. Now, I always wear a suit because of the position I'm always interviewing for. But now, if I did have one person when a recruiter tell me, well, they said go ahead and wear a polo shirt to the interview just because that's what they want me to interview in. That's obviously, okay, I'm going to wear a polo shirt to this interview. But always try to dress, you know, appropriately for the position unless you're told what to wear. One of the big things that I found is make small talk with the receptionist if there is one. You know, I built a really good relationship with a receptionist, and sure enough, the vice president who was going to make that did make me the job offer, you know, he mentioned that conversation I had with her. And because she, I guess, was very impressed that, you know, that I was sitting down talking about high school football because we were from the same local area. So we were talking about that. In the hallway, I was saw a lady with product, and I had asked if she was going to run a specific type of test because she was a quality manager. And sure enough, she ended up going back and speaking with the vice president as well and saying, you know, he approached me and he knew about this test, and he was starting to ask questions about it. So he's very knowledgeable about this stuff. So that small talk, whenever you have the opportunities, definitely helps if they're out there. You know, you don't want to necessarily memorize your resume, but really know what's there. Don't throw out numbers that aren't necessary. If you're going to reference something that's on your resume, make sure you know those numbers because you want to make sure that you're not saying one thing and another thing is written. But that also gets to the resume that you want to make sure you have impacts on your resume. You know, a lot of the interview questions that we used at previously were the SAR, situation, action, result. And so you want to be able to do the same thing in your resume and be prepared to then walk through that situation, action, resume during an interview. And on that resume, anytime you can put dollars saved or people impacted or reduction of waste or increase in throughput by this many percents, that you always want those hard numbers in there. That really catches the eye of those of us who are interviewing people. And definitely prepare for some of the job descriptions that you're going to be preparing for to explain. I definitely would suggest coming up with a few other examples that are not on your resume, because we can read your resume, and a lot of times, you know, you don't give the full story on your resume, and so you can definitely expand upon what is written there. But if you can come up with additional examples to address some of those, that is always key with me. And the last thing, getting on the resume, is keep it to 2 pages or less. Once it gets over 2 pages, it just gets extremely long and boring to read. So 2 pages is about the limit where I and most people that I work with kind of get turned off. So,
you know, a couple points that you made, and is in the area of the interviewing with the receptionist, or, you know, engaging with the receptionist, that type of thing. I always tell people that everybody is an interviewer. When you go into a facility, everybody's an interviewer. And I appreciate what you're saying, because, you know, that's certainly played out in that scenario. And so even though they might be the janitor, even though they might be the receptionist, the night guard, who knows, you know, you're still under that microscope in an interviewing perspective. They still have their input many times, so it's very important that way. Let's talk about a little bit maybe the trends that you've seen. You've been interviewing people. And maybe let's gear it a little bit towards maybe the newer entrance to the job market, what you're seeing in terms of the abilities or their interaction skills versus maybe what you've seen, you know, earlier. Is there any trends that you see? Are there some things that our listeners have to be really careful about?
Do you want to talk more about the, hourly employee or the salary employee portion?
Actually, you maybe touch it on both, but just let's do a little brief coverage here. You know, talk about the hourly, what you see, and then maybe the salary situation.
Okay, coming in, it's amazing that a lot of the interviews, especially for the hourly positions that we are interviewing for, so often they come in extremely relaxed and almost like they're your friend. And like I said, I enjoy engaging, and if it moves to the point where we can start talking about, you know, again, high school football or anything like that, it's nice. But a lot of the hourly employees that I've seen are just coming in too relaxed. They sit back in their chair almost like it's just a casual conversation. And, you know, when I look for somebody to hire, I want somebody that is going to hopefully be more a little bit professional, and again, this is my own personal thoughts, but I like to see somebody that's going to be a little more professional come in and tell me what they can do for me and for the company. And too often I've seen that they just come in and almost like it's a formality that the position should be given because they are there interviewing for the position. So that was very difficult for me to see that, because I had, most of my interviews before had been for supervisory type, salary type positions. And so the ones who did come in, again, dressed appropriately and prepared, really, you know, it was a no-brainer for me that I really enjoyed the interviews with them. And they usually received high scores. Now, just because somebody comes in that's not dressed appropriately and extremely casual throughout the conversation or the interview, if they were a strong candidate, it would at least be considered. But to me, that was a trend that I did not like to see. So again, that goes to, you know, dressing appropriately and treating it as comfortable but yet professional.
One thing I might mention here, Ted, too, is that a lot of times what I've heard is your hourlies interview for a job rather than to think career-wise. And I realize many of them are from a skill set that they're just looking for that job. But do they have a better chance that they look from a career standpoint with that company?
Definitely. You know, you want to, if you're looking to promote within the company, that's huge, because that's going to tell me you're motivated, that's going to tell me you're energized, and that you want to do the right thing. And that you are going to hopefully be, you know, you yourself are going to police yourself and try to better yourself, better the position you're in, and better the department. So those are huge benefits whenever I can get somebody who's going to come in and basically say, you know, I'm coming in here like this. My next steps, I would love to move into a supervisory role after I prove myself, because I believe that I have strong leadership skills. To me, that's somebody I want to hire.
Mm-hmm. Good. How about with regards to the hourly a little bit, trends that you've seen, that type of thing, of individuals coming in, anything that you would discourage, anything that you would encourage, I guess?
For the salary, people coming in, especially a lot of the interviews that I had done, they are extremely motivated, and I think a lot of that obviously has to do with the current job market out there. Extremely motivated. They are, a lot of them now are getting great experience, especially if they're right out of college. They're getting a lot of a great internship experience. And for those of you who are in college, if you can jump on an internship whenever possible, that is huge, because that builds that base for when you are entering the job market. And if you're anything like my brother, he ended up getting a job from the company that he wanted because of that that he had interned with. So those, never shy away. That gets back to, again, that continuing education. Instead of coming home for the summer, go and do an internship and build upon your experiences, or, you know, create those experiences, I guess, actually, as an intern, create those experiences and build those skill sets that you need to come in an interview. For the supervisor positions, once a lot of people started, unfortunately, getting laid off from their positions, too often we saw people coming in to interview within our companies that I've worked for, and they, again, didn't have those impacts. They didn't have those situation action results that they could give us. It was a lot of, well, you know, I supervised this, and that's about it, and they couldn't give us any real comfort to what their level of experience was. And so, again, it goes back to the resume building, making sure you have strong impact bullets on those, and strong ways for you to convey that. Too often we end up giving people who are interviewing for salary positions, we end up hiring them for hourly positions. Again, like we were talking about just a few minutes ago, Russ, was they wanted to be a supervisor. They were a supervisor previously, but they really couldn't convey to us that they deserved to be a supervisor within our organization. So we gave them the hourly, an hourly position offer to be able to come in and then prove themselves within our ranks, and then hopefully someday move up. So those were the big things that we started to see as people started, you know, leaving their companies, as their companies started defaulting, and coming to interview with us.
That's a good point, because some of the advice I've been giving as a recruiter now, with people sitting on the sidelines, they're getting offers or just the situation that you mentioned, that the company may not have any openings for supervisors at present. They're willing to give them an hourly position. I encourage people to jump on those positions, come into a company if it's growing and there's future opportunities, to go ahead and show what you're made of, and to show the differences in the workplace like we talked about earlier in our conversation, because believe me, you do get noticed. As we look, just one other thing I wanted to talk about here real quick is just a term what I use called fireproofing. And what I mean to that for our listeners here is, how do you make yourself non-downsizable raise yourself from level to where, if there's cuts being made, that you're going to survive several cuts or have the possibility of surviving cuts within the marketplace? What advice would you give that way?
Well, that's a great question. That's actually, if you look at my resume, that's exactly what I basically tried to do. Coming into Kraft Foods, when we had done some reorganization and restructuring, it was the people who were one-tracked that basically were the easiest to get rid of, because what they were able to do is, if they got rid of a position and that was the only thing you had known, what else are they going to do with you? Whereas if you had some quality experience, you had some operations experience, you know, maybe you had some supply chain experience, sanitation experience, now that opens up that realm for, hey, you have a lot of seniority,
we're getting rid of this position, but we're also getting rid of somebody through attrition, or they're leaving the company. We have an opening over here for you. It could be lateral, it could be a step down, it could be a step up. But now you have that experience to be able to fill multiple roles as they are downsizing a company. So I saw that firsthand with some of the senior members within Kraft Foods. But the other things are positive attitude, self-motivated. If you're constantly out there volunteering, as I did, it makes it very difficult, because they're always going to say, well, you know, Ted was on this team and he helped us here and he helped us here and he helped. Not just, well, Ted came in, he met his production goals for the day or for the month or for the year, and then, you know, he went home. No, Ted was able to save, you know, or reduce our manning by 7%, but yet, you know, we're still meeting our production goals. Or he was able to reduce, 132,000 gallons of water a year, and, you know, he was able to save us $500,000 on our nitrogen that we were using because of a project he had done. So I was putting myself out there in a lot of these things, and that makes it a lot harder for them to be able to look at you and say, well, this is one of those people we need to cut, because you've diversified yourself, you've gotten to know people outside of your realm, and you've proven yourself outside of your realm. And then the other thing is strong beliefs and values, I think, definitely helps, because if you can stick to it and you're not wishy-washy, people will notice that. People will notice that, you know, when Ted says he needs something done, these people are going to get it done, because they know that, first of all, he's going to expect nothing less of them, and he's going to be able to back it up, and he's going to be able to do whatever he needs to do to help them get to that stage. And so those are all those things that when upper-level management and, you know, up into the directorate and above levels, as they're looking down at these positions, or they're asking, you know, the plant manager, well, what do you think? Those are all those things that are going to stand out to them and make it, you know, make you be the one that they're going to want to keep.
Mm-hmm. Very good. You know, I don't know if you've seen this be the case, too. We talked a little bit about the downsizing. I've seen individuals within their careers where they've had some exposure in other areas, and what they've done is they've divided up responsibilities. That was one position. They divided that position, eliminated that position, divided amongst three people. And because the person had some experience in supply chain or whatever the case may be, they assumed some of those responsibilities in addition to their own, and they were able to maintain their employment with an organization.
Absolutely, and that's one of those bargaining chips, too. As you progress through, you can use that as a bargaining chip as well. Hey, you know, I got more experience in doing this, or I've been filling two roles for a while. Is this going to become a permanent thing? And if so, you know, once you get past the initial, hey, we're going to be downsizing, I've seen it be used as a bargaining chip and say, hey, I'd like to see a 5% pay increase because I am doing, you know, all this extra work, and it has worked. It depends on the culture of your organization. Yes, they did a cutback, but, you know, they're cutting an $80,000 job and you're asking for $3,000 more pay. You know, it's a lot easier for them to stomach, especially if they really like you and want to keep you.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Good. Well, Ted, I really appreciate you coming aboard today and talking. I think your insights are very, very good, and I think they'll be very helpful to our listening audience. As far as, going back on the directional motivation side of it, what I would encourage our listeners, number one, is if there's individuals that we can help with their career, with different resources that we can provide, we'd love to do that. So, you know, I encourage our listeners to go ahead and send out our information to others that we can take and touch and make a difference for them in their lives. Ted, your closing thoughts on directional motivation, and again, you know, why you advocate so much for us here.
Definitely look through the worksheets. Give yourself a true evaluation. You definitely do not want to sugarcoat yourself when you're doing your those worksheets that Russ and the team on directional motivation have put together. You want to be able to understand who you are and what it is that's going to make you better, and looking at not only yourself but at, you know, the top, you know, performers within your group, your organization. To really get an understanding of what it is that's going to make you a better person, a better leader, a better individual, you know, everything. You really want to be able to focus on the interview prep And you know, you have a lot of resources out there on that site that will really help with that interview prep. But don't be afraid to ask for the coaching too, because going through a mock interview with yourself is a lot easier than it is going through a mock interview with somebody else. And these coaches that are offered here can definitely be able to prepare you better than trying to just prepare yourself. So definitely, you know, reach out and take your advantage of these resources that are there, because you know, Russ and the team have been doing this for a long time. He's been a great resource of mine so far. So hopefully you'll be able to find the same benefits that I've been able to find.
Good. Well, thank you, Ted. I appreciate it. And we will be talking on some other subjects in the future. Again, I just really, really thank you. It's a pleasure having you.
Well, thank you very much, Russ, and I'm glad I could help.